Technically speaking.
Welcome to our Technically Untechnical Technology Talk.
A Nywick Atlantic production.
And an award-winning podcast with your hosts, Chelsea Holloway and Alex Jackson.
Alex, we are back. 2025, new year. I've got some new goals this year. You got new goals?
Yes, I have a couple new goals. I'm trying to be more intentional in the things I do and wanting to take a little bit more of calculated risks.
Okay, intentional, calculated risks. Those are some nice goals. Mine are a little less in-depth. You know, I still don't have my social media apps on my phone. So I'm giving myself kudos for that. That's going well. I only get on when I'm on the desktop. So I only get on like Facebook and Instagram like once a month at most. So I'm going to keep that going.
That's really good.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it going and keep doing that, which has actually become pretty easy. And then another one I've got is more of like a mindset. So I guess it's a little philosophical to match your intentional, but I'm so good. I'm one of those people that can focus on everything that can go wrong, you know, and make a plan A, B, C, D, right? Yeah. No more. 2025 is the year that I'm trying to focus on what goes right. Like, think of, it could go right this way. Just, you know.
That's definitely the way we have to go. Make sure you have that mindset.
It might help.
Or right, not left.
Right, exactly.
That's right, Jay.
Not left, that's right. So that's the goal for 2025. We're starting this year off strong. We've got a great episode ahead of us. We're going to be talking about how Nywick Atlantic is involved with the installation of the technology that exists on Navy ships and submarines.
Coming up, we speak to two experts who tell us about the installation and modernization of Navy technology on vessels. Then we speak with Chief Joshua Mitchell for our military moment, who talks to us about the work he does for our air traffic control team. So get comfy, turn up that volume, and let's get started.
So we're going to jump right into our chat, Alex, with Mr. Ashley McGee and Mr. Eric Herman, and they were so good at explaining the depth of what we do with the technology on these ships and submarines. So let's jump right into it with that interview. Thank you both so much for joining us on the podcast. Can you please introduce yourselves?
My name is Eric Herman. I'm the competency manager for installation planning and execution. Just a little bit of personal thing about myself, just so you know, I am hearing impaired in both ears since birth. I grew up having to learn how to speak through many speech therapy sessions, so you might hear an accent in my voice, so I hope to be understandable.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
I'm Ashley McGee. I'm the competency supervisor for new construction installation planning.
Can you please explain what it means when we say installation and modernization for the fleet?
So yes, installation and modernization for the fleet. And so what that means is we're tasked with delivering, integrating, installing systems on board Navy ships, submarines, and shore stations throughout the world. And so when we say modernization, that's a term that we use to refer to new capabilities and new systems on those platforms. And the fleet, that's the warfighters, the Navy, Sailors, Marine Corps.
What do you guys mean by systems? What does that entail?
So systems, you know, it can be software or hardware. You know, those are the technical product that we put on board the ships and submarines. Some of the systems and capabilities that we install, I just want to name a few, and that's the C4I system. You might have heard of CANES. You might have heard of Navy Multiband Terminals, GEAT, the Global Command and Control System. Those are some well-known C4I systems that we install.
And C4I is Command, Control, Communication, and what was the other one?
C4I, you got that. Command and Control, Communication, Computer, and Intelligence Systems.
Computer and Intelligence, that's it. So from what I'm getting from you is when you say installation and modernization for the fleet, you are literally building and configuring these like large types of racks and technology and then installing them into like various vessels such as ships and submarines for our fleet. And modernization just means you're keeping it up to date. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just to expand on that, if you've read the CNO navigation plan and you're familiar with, it talks about Project 33, that very first target is to ready the fleet by installing system capabilities on the Navy ship and get them delivered on time with high quality. And so that is exactly what we're doing.
And these systems, like you mentioned, they control everything on these ships or help with the navigation, the communications, just and just updating their like daily life, like so they can get paid. These systems are involved with all sorts of technology on this ship to support that Project 33.
You know, I'd like to add on to that. You know, you think you put it in simple terms like your iPhone. It constantly has updates to all the applications on it. And, you know, and if you're using an iPhone that's 3 or 4 versions out of date, you know, you feel like it's an antique because it doesn't do some of the newer technology. And the systems, software and hardware on our ships and submarine and shore sites are no different. You know, they require constant updates. And when you marry that up to the purchasing and procurement and ship design, you know, you think about how old a system might be, it can become out of date very quickly. So our objective, you know, as Eric laid out when you mentioned Project 33, is to keep up with the rest of the world on vulnerabilities for systems so that our ships have secure communication systems.
So not only do you all install and modernize ships, but do you all also work with new construction as well?
Yes, we have teams at all of our major shipbuilding partners and the fleet concentration areas. We have personnel that are assigned permanently at the shipbuilders so they can be there throughout all of the stages of the shipbuilding process. And they work in connection with the NAVC folks and the supervisor of shipbuilding to help us achieve the Navy's 2025 shipbuilding plan. And in that way, it allows us to support the larger Navy goals that the CNOs outlined in the 2024 NAV plan and the Project 33, so that we can compete with other nations and remain a key naval power.
Can you explain what the 2025 Navy shipbuilding plan is?
The CNO's shipbuilding plan that's approved by Congress, you'll find it on the OMB website if you Googled it. I guess if you stewed it down in a nutshell, you could say that it's a 30-year shipbuilding plan. So it details how much money we should forecast for over the 3 decades. What's the end strength of our Navy going to be?
About how long does it take from start to finish in building a ship and having it ready for the fleet?
The time that you would lay the keel until the time that the ship is operational in the fleet. There's several milestones that our team coordinates, but overall, in rough magnitude, it's about 5 years. 5 years, when you're talking about the simple analogy of your iPhone, if your iPhone was 5 years old, you feel like it's way out of date. So when this ship comes out of that, the next thing we want to do before we send it out to the fleet is to give it one more modernization to bring it up to speed with everything cutting edge.
And with the new 2025 shipbuilding plan, it sounds like you guys are going to be pretty busy, basically, moving forward to not only modernize, but keep up with the new construction. That's great. So tell us a little bit about your engineers and scientists. What is their day-to-day?
About 240 of us, not only a lot of them in Charleston, but a lot in the Norfolk area at the shipyard. But we do have a lot of them embedded at the different shipyard throughout the country. Employees down in Pascagoula, Mobile, Alabama, Mayport, even up in Groton, Connecticut, where Ashley is in the submarine base. We have some even all the way up to Wisconsin in the shipyard there and over in Bremerton, Washington. So they're embedded up there at the shipyard, installing systems every day on the ship. You know, you ask about the daily life of these installation SMEs, you know, and typically they have on their hard hat, they have on their steel-toe shoes, their safety glasses, every day working with the sailors, you know, working with the naval supervisor of a shipyard, the type commander, the commanding officer of the ship to get the installation done.
That's an exciting experience, most likely, for these engineers and technicians, or SMEs, you said, which is subject matter experts. They get to actually work alongside with the sailors, it sounds like, on the ships, on the submarines. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's rewarding to some degree. You know, even for myself, you know, being an engineer right out of college, I have no military background. But we do have a lot of vets in the command and on our team. In my opinion, I think it's the next best thing to being in the military if you haven't been in the military. You know, you get to work with the sailors every day, and you feel like you're contributing to the nation by working in this environment.
You know, I retired from the Navy after 28 years, but I feel like we're right there with all of the environment where I've been working, I don't know, about 40 years. It's definitely it's a familiar place to be down there with the sailors. And it is very much in tune with the deck plate. And as a hiring manager, getting out to the sites, it's very, very nice. You know, one of the CNO's things she mentions is our workforce. And it lets us stay in tune with our workforce. It lets us note good candidates for future jobs. And it kind of is it's a win-win for us.
What are you looking for in a good candidate, whether it's a Navy sailor currently or a civilian? What are some traits and some qualities that you want in an engineer or a technician?
First and foremost, we're looking for a person that knows the systems, understands the system and the administration that's required to put it together. They should be well-spoken and able to brief at various levels of the chain of command. They should be able to talk to someone on a deck plate about a technical issue and be able to communicate with the leadership of other organizations, you know, for team building and collaboration, because everybody wants to feel like their job is important. And at the end of the day, we all have to play in a sandbox together. So those things I'm looking for as a hiring manager when I'm interviewing a candidate.
And this skill set is really important also, because you made the comparison to an iPhone earlier. Putting a system on a Navy ship might be a little bit more life or death oriented than it is like an app on an iPhone. So it's a very important and fulfilling role. And I'm really glad that Niwik Atlantic is, you know, employing so many talented people at so many places across the country to support this effort.
You know, there's a lot of smart people out there, and we can provide that feedback when we install systems on the ships and submarines and how they operate and how they work, and feed it back to the engineers in 5-0 when they design it and implement some of the technologies like cloud computing, artificial intelligence, and getting those capabilities out there to the fleet.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us and explaining all of this. It's been really insightful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alex, I didn't realize we had so many engineers and technicians spread out across this country outside of even our main areas, which are like Norfolk and Charleston and the Naval District Washington area. But we've got people in Connecticut, Washington State, Alabama.
We even have them in Wisconsin. I didn't know that, and I was in the Navy.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And some of these places are for submarines and others, like who knew, right, Joe? Like Wisconsin.
Exactly.
So I thought that was really impressive. And it was really inspiring the way Eric spoke about how working on his team is the next best thing to being active duty in his mind, because they're on the ship side by side with those sailors. So I thought it was really great chatting with them.
It was. And I really enjoyed that we got to hear that perspective of the Navy. Oftentimes you think of the sailors out at sea and working on ships, but this is sort of before the ships are even out at sea. So it was really neat to hear that perspective as well. And with that, it's time to move into our military moment. I recently sat down with Chief Joshua Mitchell, who told us about his experiences in the Navy and working in our Air Traffic Control Division.
Thank you, Chief Mitchell. Thank you for joining me today. Can you please tell us what you do for Niwik Atlantic?
Hey, Alex. Happy to be here. And I've been on board Niwik Atlantic just a little bit less than 2 months. I'm an air traffic controller, I work at NAVFIG within NIWC, and we design and analyze terrain for instrument flight rules, just as the easiest way to break it down. So for all the Navy and Marine Corps air stations and in and outside of the United States, we do terrain analysis to keep instrument flight rules safe. It's the easiest way to say it.
How long have you been in the Navy?
March, I will be in the Navy 14 years.
And what has been your most favorite experience in terms of being active duty?
It's ever evolving. So you're continually challenged. I'm an ambitious person, and I think that if I didn't have challenges or goals to set or to work towards, that I would get bored. And the Navy and military as a whole definitely offers you those opportunities to challenge yourself.
Could you share some advice on what you would give to someone who's interested in joining the Navy or may not have known what you can do?
I would say go in with an open mind. Probably if you're new to the military and looking at coming in, whatever preconceived notion you have of how it's going to be is probably not accurate. It's going to be different probably than how you perceived it. And I would say go in with an open mind, and that there's going to be highs and there's going to be lows, like anything. And it's not all sunshine and roses, but you're definitely going to have experiences in the military that you're not going to have in the civilian world with the travel and just the things that you're going to be exposed to.
And as you've moved up in rank over the years, what has been the most rewarding to you in terms of helping lead other Navy sailors, and you've been becoming a leader yourself?
The most rewarding to me is to take a young person that came right out of high school and came into the military, so hasn't had a lot of exposure out in the world, and maybe they don't even know what their talents are or their skill sets are. And especially somebody that's lacking confidence, and to present them with the challenge, and maybe they're reluctant to take on that challenge, but through training and learning and teaching themselves that they can rise to the challenge and become successful, and especially whenever they didn't think that they were going to be able to do it. And then when you see somebody overcome adversity and challenges and achieve something that they didn't even think that they could do, and to see that confidence grow, and then for them to turn it around and to teach back to other people below them, I think that's the most rewarding.
And what has been one of your most favorite duty locations or tours that you've gone on?
I was on the USS Carl Vinson aircraft here in San Diego. It was my first duty station. And I did a Westpac deployment there and went around the world. So for the travel aspect of it, that was neat, right? And being on a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier and going, we went to Australia. I got 5 days in Australia, went to Hong Kong, went to India. Loved living in San Diego. The weather is great. I see why people want to be there. Then I was stationed at Kingsville, Texas, in South Texas. A completely different experience. I'm from Texas, so I enjoyed being there. And my most recent tour that I just finished was at Naval Air Station Fallon, Nevada, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere in northern Nevada, but it's where Top Gun is. And being an air traffic controller and working at Naval Air Station with the Navy's premier fighters and fighter pilots in a really large airspace, I would say professionally, that was a really rewarding experience, and it was just a lot of fun. I mean, you can be in the control tower in a single day, see an F-5 and F-15 and F-16 and F-22 and an F-35, all of the Navy and Marine Corps' premier fighters. That's just cool.
I've heard you mention that you did a tour with the Blue Angels.
I didn't get to do a tour with them. I just was in the right place at the right time, and I did get to ride on Fout Albert. And that's one of those things. I had no idea that was going to happen. I was at Pensacola, and the air show was going on. I took a tour of the control tower, and the Blue Angels were doing their air show. They called up to the control tower and said, hey, does anybody want to go for a ride with the Blue Angels? I about dislocated my shoulder, put my hand in the air, and ran across the airfield and got there for the debrief. And next thing I know, I'm in Fat Albert in the C-130, and we're doing zero gravity, and the Marines are hooting and hollering. And I woke up that morning and did not know that was going to happen. That's kind of unexpected things that, you know, that you can encounter in the Navy. That's really a memorable experience.
That's impressive.
Yes, it was cool.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I would just say, speaking to, you know, the kind of the recruiting part of it, and young people, if they're, you know, thinking about joining the military, I don't think that a sense of duty and a sense of obligation is there maybe like it was in past generations, and that's okay. We haven't really been highly actively involved in wars, but you're still needed. You're still needed, and opportunities are there. Like for myself, I've gotten 2 reenlistment bonuses. I got all of my college student loans paid off. I got money for adoption assistance. So, yeah, there'll be a lot asked of you, but opportunities are there for financial rewards and for advancement and for training. So, like I said in the beginning, just go into it with an open mind. It can be very rewarding. It's what you make of it.
Thank you, Chief Mitchell, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Alex. Appreciate it.
I love that, Alex. What a great interview. He seemed like a really, really awesome guy. I really liked his advice about how if you join the military, you need to go in with an open mind and get rid of all those preconceived notions.
Absolutely. He shared how passionate he is about working with the sailors under his leadership. And it was great just to hear about his experiences working for Nauwoo Atlantic.
All right. Before we come to an end of this episode, Alex, do you have any predictions for 2025?
Yes. I think we're going to get some more snow here in the Charleston and the southern region of the country before spring gets here. So I'm excited to see that.
A second major snowfall for you, because you just had one in Charleston and that was rare. That would be pretty exciting. My predictions are, I think the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. It's right now, we're airing this and it's before they've hit the Super Bowl. It's going to be Chiefs versus Eagles. I think the Chiefs are bound to win again. We'll see. And I think Mr. Beast is going to buy TikTok. Or going to try, obviously.
And who is Mr. Beast?
So if you don't know who Mr. Beast is, he is a really famous YouTuber and he's super rich. And he also has a brand new show out, I think on Amazon Prime. That's like a game show that's gotten really popular. And so he's throwing his name in with a whole bunch of millionaires, billionaires to try and buy TikTok. So it's very interesting to see this YouTuber make it to the point where now they're going to buy this social media app. So we'll see, but there's my predictions for 2025.
I'd love to see if either of you are actually clairvoyant.
Yes, we'll see. But to learn about anything that we've mentioned in this podcast as it pertains to Nauwoo Atlantic, of course, check out our social medias under NAVOR or our Nauwoo Atlantic website. Links are in the description.
And that wraps up another episode in the new year. Thanks for listening. If you have a tip or story that you think should be included in this podcast, please contact us at our public affairs email address, which is listed in the description.
Naval Information Warfare Center Atlantic, also known as NIWC, is the East Coast branch of the Naval Information Warfare Systems Command within the Department of the Navy. We develop a range of technologies that provide state-of-the-art capabilities to the United States military.